Welcome to Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. I'll bring you all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. Whether it's a live public conversation and we're speaking from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer, from the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week. I'm Sabrina, this is Trailer Talk, and I am so excited to have Mimi McGirl joining me in the trailer at the kitchen table. Approaching sunset, we are surrounded by trees on a street named Beech, as in the beech tree. And Mimi McGirl is a director, a dramaturg, a performer, and a landscape gardener who has been diving into nature, into wildness, into the queerness of it all, and is working on a project right now called The Queer Woods. It is a continuation of a previous project, which she'll share with us. I want to say about plants and flowers. This is the conversation she and I have been having for a number of years about the natural world and queerness. So the queer woods, what does that mean?
I think it's three different things. The first one is really just science. You know, how do trees reproduce? How, you know, what are the relationships between trees, between the canopy and the mid-level and the understory of the wilderness? And how does that all work together? I would say the second part is really about the way that poets and philosophers and writers in history have looked to nature, especially queer poets and writers have looked to nature and its importance to our identity as human beings and what it signifies for us and what it means for us as queer people in the world. The third part, I think, is just, I just wanted to talk about the feeling that you have, especially now that there's less wilderness, that it's more in need of protection. And there are a lot of organizations now that have been actively trying to bring queer people into the woods, because the wilderness, you know, the queer world has typically been thought of as built spaces like bars and restaurants or bookstores, neighborhoods and cities. And I just want to make a pitch for the fact that when you're walking in the forest, you know, you can really have a different way of thinking about who you are related to the rest of the world. And I know from what I've read that I'm not the only person, the only queer person who feels like they can truly be themselves when they're out in the woods and with the trees. And so I wanted to talk about it.
Incredible. So many ideas you just shared with us. So the feeling, history of poets and writers who have focused on nature, the science of it. So where did it start for you, who's asking these questions, who has a long history of investigating and exploring gender and sexuality, focused on that in theater and performance? You're also a landscape gardener, so you have your hands in the soil. So where did it begin? What kind of has launched you into these incredible questions?
I'm sure that some of it just comes from my childhood. I grew up in suburbia, essentially, but big enough backyards that I could get lost. And my mom is a great gardener, has always just made beautiful surroundings for us. And so I noticed that as a young person, and I loved what she made. And then as I, you know, grew up, I started being interested in theater, and then that led to my interest in the way that gender and racial stereotypes are presented in theater and how people talk about them and how audiences are affected, how culture affects theater and how theater affects culture and performance. So I think that both of those things were already there for me in, when I was younger. But after I finished my theater schooling, I needed a job, and I realized that I was more suited to working outside as much as I could, rather than in an academic environment where I would be mostly inside. I still do my theater at night for the most part, but during the day, I've got, as you said, I have my hands in the dirt. And I started as just a gardener, just a person who people hired to go make their houses look nice, make their properties look nice. I had a great mentor, Murmur Blakesley. She, you know, just taught me so much about the aesthetics and the science of plants and flowers. And so I gave a talk a few years ago on basically asking the question, is there such a thing as a queer garden? And I talked about the way that plants and flowers propagate. I talked about colors. I talked about Oscar Wilde's green carnation that he had. It was like a code to tell people whether they, you know, whether they might be interested in, whether fellow men were interested in other men. And the color of lavender, how did that become such a queer color? You know, how did that come around? So that was my first talk.
And now The Queer Woods is a continuation of that, but I'm intrigued about the color lavender, the plant lavender itself, about this green carnation with Oscar Wilde. Is there anything you can share with us?
I think that as our culture has evolved, we've always needed symbols. We've always needed hidden languages as queer people, because you couldn't just come right out and meet someone and go, oh, by the way, I'm gay, or, you know, I like women, or what, you know, for the longest time. In fact, people still don't really do that. We look at other cues now. But, you know, in the 19th century, they did come up with this code, really, so that when people met other people, they could be like, oh, I think they might be one of me. And one of those things was definitely giving somebody a flower. If you gave them a lavender flower, that might be a symbol. Or in Oscar Wilde's specific case, he actually outright started a trend where he suggested people wear green carnations. Just over time, it just became a gay color. And the lavender menace came along. You know, people adopted the terminology. And now it's really a lot of people, you know, the pink triangle, the, you know, there's just different colors that get instantly associated with queerness. And it started, I think, with flowers.
That is fascinating. And you mentioned with this current project, The Queer Woods, that you have been looking at the combination of science and the arts and emotions. Am I leaving something out? Science, art, the emotions?
And philosophy and writing, you know, poetry and history.
So what would be some example, something you'd want us to know, something you want me to know in this moment as I'm looking out at the trees on Beach Street?
Okay, well, for example, beaches, there are many kinds of beaches, and it is in a family called the Fagaceae. Also oaks. Oaks, actually, their binomial is a quercus, quercus. So oaks are quercuses. And then, you know, a red oak would be a quercus rubra, red rubra in Latin. So that's the Latin term for it. So beeches and oaks, you probably recognize acorn. I know the street down the road is Oak Street. You recognize an acorn. Kids see them and pick them up and play with them and do all sorts of things with them. But that's actually the fruit of an oak tree. And the way that that fruit is made is through a process of pollinating, and then that acorn is created and falls to the ground, and then in an ideal reproductive situation, the acorn produces another oak tree. And same for beech trees. They don't make acorns, but it's a similar process. In fact, all trees have a somewhat similar process. But what's unique, or what's not even unique, which is actually kind of my point, is most trees, they don't propagate with a male tree and a female tree. In fact, only about 20% of trees are what we call dioecious, which means that there are two different houses, a male house and a male tree and a female tree, and the pollination has to happen between those two trees. 80% of trees are what we would call monoecious. And what that is that both the pollination process and the fruiting process can happen in the same tree. So flowers in a tree, either there are flowers that some people would refer to as female flowers and other flowers that people would refer to as male flowers. But what it really is stamens and pistils. and then an insect or the wind or any number of other ways the pollen is transferred from the stamen to the pistil, and that's what then starts to create a fruit, which then creates a seed. So most trees have both. Most trees have both male and female flowers on the same tree. Some trees, like the oak, and even, well, actually the oak has, some trees have male and female flowers, some occasionally only have male, some occasionally only have female. Sometimes they have all male flowers, and then they change and have all female flowers. So over the course of a 50, 100-year-old oak, that oak could have gone through many different reproductive strategies. Sometimes it has to do with where the flowering is on the tree, quite literally.
How does what you've just been describing about the shifting, would you call it identity? Or as I'm thinking about queerness, mm-hmm. and how you're connecting to ideas around queerness, mm-hmm. and looking at the natural world, mm-hmm. and in this case, trees, the woods, how do you interpret that? Or how does it somehow perhaps make meaning in queer community, yeah. or connection, or in this moment that we find ourselves in terms of political constructs or social?
There are still quite a few people and places where being gay or lesbian or transgender is considered unnatural. And what is, in fact, actually the case is when you go into nature, away from a cultivated space, away from a space full of people socialized to think a certain way and be a certain way and fit into a certain category, what you find in nature is that it's all kinds. And there's changing sex, there's asexual reproduction, there are flowers that literally have both stamens and pistils in them, so they're hermaphroditic. They're intersex, if you want to call that as a human term. The terminology in our culture is different, but it's so much more common that trees, flowers, and plants do what they need to do in order to stay alive and to thrive. And nobody really cares. Nobody else really cares whether that tree one year is producing female flowers and then the next year it's producing male flowers. And so going into the woods and feeling that feeling of being actually natural, much more natural than the strict binaries of being a male or a female and having a heterosexual relationship, that it's more of a cooperative relationship. It's more of like the understory is helping the canopy is creating these opportunities for space for understory, the mycelium in the roots are connecting all of the trees to one another. Mycelium has, in some cases, certain kinds of fungi have thousands of different kinds of sexual reproductive modes, you know, genetically, if you look at the DNA.
I find this thrilling because it's freeing. And because we're such a small part of this natural world and yet have dominated these narratives and policy and structure and created such suffering, such confinement, also constricting our imaginations and the possibility of our own life and how we can connect to one another, not only one another as humans, but connect to this world. So I just do find this really exciting. So thank you. I'm speaking with Mimi McGirl about her current project, The Queer Woods. And we are talking about this wildness around us, the natural environment, and its connection to queerness. And Mimi is talking about even how that is defined and what that means. So handing it back over to you.
You know, there's people like Walt Whitman, one of the most famous poets in American literature, who was queer. That wasn't a word they necessarily would have used back then, or they wouldn't have used it for one's sexuality. But the way he wrote about nature was universally embraced as a positive way to look at the world. Vita Sackville-West, in her relationship with Virginia Woolf, they had a letter-writing love affair, and Vita Sackville-West basically recommended to Virginia that she go out into the woods and allow herself to take on an estranged environment, because she thought she may find that there's other parts of her that she hasn't actually really acknowledged. So nature as a metaphor, like going out and liberating yourself in nature, liberating your mind, has been something people have been talking about. Queers people have been talking about for hundreds of years. It's just, you know, it gets put into other categories. I mean, categories are necessary. We need categories. I need to know if somebody prefers, you know, a vegetarian hamburger. You know, I mean, they're helpful sometimes. I need to get 10 of the veggie burgers and 10 of the meat burgers because I have, you know, 10 each vegetarians. But that's kind of about it. The usefulness of categories is very limited. And what we've allowed ourselves to do is to allow categorization to rule us rather than to use it as a tool for us to thrive. And so I look at people like Victor Turner, who used to talk about the forest as a betwixt and a between, like a liminal space.
I was maybe about to say a liminal. Yeah. So the forest, something Victor Turner.
Yeah, like he went out and studied. He was, you know, anthropological studies on rituals. And young people would be sent out into the woods, and then they would have to kind of figure out who they were, because they didn't have society and the structure of society and community to tell them who they were supposed to be. And then they'd come back. And in his argument, they needed that community and that structure eventually to keep moving forward. But there was this time where they were able to sort of figure out really what parts of them were what and who they wanted to come back as. Donna Haraway, you've probably heard of her. You know, she's got, she writes a lot about breaking down those binaries into, you know, hybridity, basically. So that's another kind of way of looking at it. So the dualities of science and nature, like gender or race, are not always so helpful, this setup of dualities. And so Donna Haraway would present that maybe we need to create an emancipatory process, have shared conversations, and have situational knowledge rather than a kind of categorical demarcation of who is who and what is what.
Thank you, Mimi. What in this moment are you finding the most moving for yourself? If you think about your life and these studies and this intersection between being a landscape gardener, being someone who's thinking about these ideas, somebody who's a dramaturg, a director, I'm curious in thinking about wilderness, the wilds, and the canopy, as you described it, of the trees and the different levels from the canopy to the understory to the mycelium. What is the connection between a landscaped area in nature and the wilds? And then where does queerness fit? So that's one question. The other that occurred to me as you were just speaking is because you talked about the emotional, somehow learning things that have emotional resonance. And so what is it that you're trying to share with us about the queerness of the natural world?
Well, as I said at the beginning, I think this notion that there are things that are natural and things that are unnatural, I immediately want to call into question. For me, the wilderness, it represents uncultivated space. So space that has not been transformed by agriculture or by building or planting or roads and houses. So wilderness is a place you can go. And that's, like I said before, there's less and less of it. It's a place you can go that hasn't really been manipulated by human beings insofar as climate change, of course, has. But you're still walking through a place where no human may have ever set foot. And so I think that being in those spaces, you stop and you're quiet and you listen and you think and you realize, I'm actually a part of this just as much as I'm a part of what I just came from. And I think queerness is everywhere. That's I think, my point, is that queerness is in cities, and queerness is in suburbia, but queerness is also in the woods. And I think typically people have seen the woods as this very sort of deeply masculine space of frontier and domination, and, you know, you're going to go in and settle it and make it safe for human habitation. And that happens, of course, all the time, but it's also a place for fairies, you know, flying around. And I'm working on another project, which is, it's called the Lucy Joseph Project. It's an actual historical figure named, who was born as Lucy Ann Lobdell in Longitty, not far from here in the Delaware River Valley, who for the most part of their adult life became Joseph Lobdell, Joseph Israel Lobdell. And they got, I think, the chance very young to be in nature and learn who they were instead of who people were telling them that they should be. And now there's all these organizations. I think what's closest to my heart is all these organizations. There's one in particular I wanted to shout out. There's a person named Patty Gonia you can look up. And Patty Gonia is a drag queen. And she has started this organization. I think it's called Oathists. But there's others too. There's Venture Out. There's Queer Wilderness. These are organizations you can find online where you can go and be with other queers in nature and in wilderness and go backpacking or canoeing or whatever, you know, and you'll be safe. Like, I think a lot of people are afraid to go into the wilderness. They're like, it might be scary in there. There might, you know, but in fact, I find it scarier to be among people who I don't know. I think when I'm in the woods, the worst that can happen is that I get between a bear and her cub, and then I just get the heck out. You know, like, the wilderness is really not that scary if you're guided well and you know enough. So that would be something I'm really happy about, is that there are so many more organizations now who are specifically trying to get queer young people, but also older people, to experience the wilderness and experience that feeling that I know very well.
To think about it as we're sitting here in the trailer looking out at a stand of trees with the sun setting. And certainly nature and the natural world has always been a place that I have felt the most comfortable and that I could be myself without those constrictions of what other people are telling me who to be or what to be. So that's really fascinating. I wonder if in your studies, have you come up with, is there a definition of queer that you've come to as you investigate it more?
There are a few definitions that have really worked when I've tried to theorize about this. And one of them has to do with time. One of them really is about queerness as not a fixed concept, that it's a constantly evolving concept, that it changes depending on the context, depending on the time, people, the place. And it's not trying to be something established and firm and forever. So that really, I would say, is one thing. And then the other thing, I think, this is the word forest. It comes from the Latin forus, which just basically means outside. And I think queerness is just a way of looking at things from a viewpoint that's a little outside the mainstream. You know, it's just a perspective. And I think everybody can tap in on their queerness. This is not about, you know, you being falling into a particular club and having the right credentials to qualify as queer or not. I think queerness is accessible by anybody if they want to access that part of themselves.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we conclude?
I guess I would say, in the city, when they plant a city, they talk about where the trees are going to go and what kind of trees they're going to plant. And one of the things that they consider is the sex of the tree. And lately, they've been planting a lot more male trees than female trees when we're talking about a dioecious tree, because female trees drop fruit on the ground and then that creates a mess. But the problem that's actually been happening is that what that means is there are more male trees we're talking particular kinds of trees, and those are spreading pollen. So people's allergies are getting worse in urban spaces because there's predominance of male trees creating pollen and no fruit trees to accept the pollen and create the fruit. So it's a weird kind of way of looking at the woods and trees. That's a simple story. It's a very complicated kind of collection of ideas around it. But what I'm trying to point out is understanding tree science can lead just as easily into trouble as it can into fun. So it's, you know, it's a joy for me to think about it all and to think about the ways that we talk about the trees and nature.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and there's one more thing I wanted to say that I know this program is broadcast in a whole bunch of different places, but in December, I'm writing and directing a play about that person I was talking about, Lucy Joseph Lobdell, and a lot of these ideas about the queer woods have come out of my research. And that'll be at the Farm Arts Collective in December. So you can go to mimimcgirl.wordpress.com or my Instagram page, and you can find out more about that too.
That's Mimi McGurl, G-U-R-L, mimimcgirl.wordpress.com. You can also find Mimi on Instagram. And it has been such a pleasure, Mimi, to speak to you. Will you come back?
Yes.
Mimi McGurl is a theater director, a dramaturg, a landscape gardener, focusing on nature, the natural world, the plant world that surrounds us. And we've been discussing her newest project, The Queer Woods. For those of you who are going to be in Sullivan County, New York, or able to come to the area on June 22nd, Mimi will be presenting The Queer Woods, and you can find out more about that at deepwaterfestival.com. As I'm looking at these trees around us, and there's a deer looking in the door right now, so much to think about, and I appreciate your work around this and for expanding my thinking around it all and queerness and the importance of that. Thank you, Mimi.
You're very welcome.
From the kitchen table out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artel.
Donations to support Trailer Talk, now celebrating its 20th anniversary, are always gratefully received. You can find a link to make your tax-deductible donation at trailertalk.net.
Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artel. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artel. Safe travels.